evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 14, 2017. Rebels loyal to Riek Machar say they have captured Raja, the capital of Lol State.
Since 12 o'clock, we captured Raja and Raja total is under full our control. And now our forces are looking for the governor where it is. They are trying to see where it is.
And the diaspora say the time has come and gone for the international community to intervene in South Sudan.
Another solution that we have been advocating for is the arms embargo, and therefore you would provide a safer haven for civilians once there are no weapons that are available everywhere in the community.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebels with the South Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, allied to former first Vice President Riek Machar, attacked Raja Town, the capital of Lol State. The SPLM-IO Secretary General Tingo Peter confirmed that their forces are now in control of Raja Town after clashing with government troops.
The reality, since 12 o'clock, we captured Raja and Raja total is under full our control. Even now, our forces, they are looking for the governor where it is. They are trying to see where it is. But the old area is in our control.
Tingo says the governor of Lol State, Rizik Hassan Zakaria, has fled the area along with his entire cabinet. He says the SPLM-IO are asking civilians in Raja to remain calm as their forces comb the town for government soldiers who may be still hiding in residential areas.
They like to be in our side because they get themselves that they are safe, rather to be under the government inside. Okay, so now they are with us, they are safe, we give them protection, but the problem is we can't manage to give them, to offer them a food or water. This is why we are asking the communities, the international communities, to urgent to provide some food and some drugs, because there is a children and old women and men, they are outside suffering.
Tingo is urging the international community to quickly intervene, help civilians in Raja Town. He claims the SPLM-IO will protect all aid workers working in the area. Issa Ramadan is a resident of Raja Town. He confirmed to South Sudan in Focus that Raja is under the control of SPLM-IO rebels. Speaking in Arabic by phone from Raja Town, Ramadan says he could see from his home rebel forces moving around with tanks they captured from government forces a few hours ago.
I
am now speaking from Raja. At around 2 p.m., the rebels attacked the town and now they took over. Many citizens have run out into the bush and some have sought refuge in the Catholic Church, Ramadan says. The coordinator of Lol State in Juba, Ibrahim Surur, confirms that there is fighting in his state, but declined to give details. He says he tried to call officials in Raja, but most of the officials are not picking their calls. Meanwhile, the World Food Programme says three of its contract workers were killed in Wau earlier this week. Daniel James Isaka, Teap, and Ali Aliardo, all citizens of South Sudan, appear to have been killed on Monday as they try to make their way to a WFP warehouse where they work as porters. A WFP statement released today says two died of machete wounds and the third was shot to death. WFP Country Director Joyce Luma says, quote, "We are outraged and heartbroken by the deaths of our colleagues who worked every day to help provide life-saving food to millions of their fellow countrymen." Luma conveyed the sympathy and condolences of the WFP to the victim's family. Their dedication will not be forgotten, and we call on the South Sudanese authorities to hold those responsible for this unspeakable violence accountable for their actions, Luma said. WFP said it learned of the workers' death yesterday from the subcontractor that employed them. Members of the South Sudanese diaspora in the United States are speaking out after hearing harrowing accounts of targeted killings of their friends and other civilians at home. SIN Bill reports, diaspora members from all corners of the United States say enough is enough. It's time for the U.S. to act on South Sudan.
When South Sudan is making headlines here in the U.S., it's usually not good news. Simon Deng, a South Sudan activist from the northeastern state of New York, says he was horrified to hear about the killings in Wau and Pajuk this week. Deng says the problem in South Sudan is President Salva Kiir, whom he accuses of dividing the country along ethnic lines.
Enough is enough for Salva Kiir. We have seen enough. We have seen death. We have seen women being slaughtered. We have seen kids being slaughtered. We have seen people being beheaded. We have seen the demonization of the minority in the hands of the majority.
Teresa Samuel Boko, a member of the umbrella activist group Global Partnership for Peace in South Sudan, says imposing a UN-backed arms embargo could be a major step toward curbing the country's violence. And she says the UN should follow through on its plans to bolster UN mission in South Sudan forces.
And what we have been as a community advocating for it is the deployment of UN troops in other states rather than the troops being concentrated in Juba, which creates more vulnerability in the other states around South Sudan.
Peter Quell, who lives in the northwestern part of the U.S. in Washington state, also blames President Salva Kiir for atrocities that eyewitnesses say are being committed by government soldiers. Quell says he has lost confidence in the president's ability to unite South Sudanese and believes top political leaders use tactics to divide his people.
You should protect all the citizens, young and old, women, and anybody. But protecting a particular group of people is not helping our people. With the man from President Trump and the all international community, including IGAD, to remove Salva Kiir, to have a peace. We stop the displacement of millions of people. We stop the payment. We stop the suffering of many South Sudanese.
In a press statement released this week, GAP says the international community shares in the blame for the continued violence in South Sudan. Top UN officials have warned of ethnic cleansing in South Sudan and have declared fears of Rwanda-like genocide looming in the country, while blaming both government and rebel forces for committing violence. This week, Priti Patel, Britain's Secretary for International Development, called the crisis in South Sudan a genocide. The government denies its soldiers are targeting civilians. But for diaspora members like Dr. George Imuro in the southern state of Texas, the international community has fallen short on its promise to avoid a repeat of mass killings like those that occurred in Rwanda.
We have beaten our tanks for the last 4 years. The world has failed us. The world say genocide is going to happen. I say genocide is happening. The world say ethnic cleansing occurred from day one.
Samuel Boko says she is disappointed that her country runs the risk of taking a back seat to other major atrocities around the world.
I understand there had been lots of chaos around the world with everything that's going in the Middle East and so on, but we are afraid as a community that South Sudan is, and the genocide that's going in South Sudan is reaching to a boiling point.
Boko says if things don't change, she fears major issues will erupt and the entire country will be out of control. In a statement released today, Daniel Bekele, Senior Director for Africa Advocacy at the Human Rights Watch, says the pattern of abuses by government forces against civilians in Wau has become predictable, with soldiers taking revenge against unarmed civilians based on their ethnicity. Bekele says South Sudan authorities need to stop the killings, investigate the attacks, arrest the perpetrators, and bring justice to victims of crimes. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, in eastern Equatoria, hunger continues to drive thousands of South Sudanese families out of Imatong State's Equator and Lafor counties. At the border points of Madi, Opi and Uganda and Sertenye in South Sudan, dozens of South Sudanese families stream into a refugee reception center as they wait to be transferred to Uganda refugee camps. Many say they survive by eating coconuts, as we hear from Dimo Silva Aurelio in Gulu, northern Uganda.
A police officer at the Ugandan border crossing point of Madiope tears packets of high-energy biscuits and distributes them to refugees at the reception center. Most refugees here say they fled their homes in Lotuhoyaha, Irenge in Seretenya, and Ramola because they have nothing to eat. After crossing into Uganda via the Madiope border crossing, they wait for 3 to 4 days at a temporary UNHCR reception shelter. Refugee Ihisa Teresa and her 4 children who fled Ramola village arrived at the Madiope border crossing on Monday. Teresa says she and her children were surviving on coconuts for 2 months. Speaking in her native Lokwa language, Teresa says she decided to leave her village because she feared her children would soon die of hunger.
There is no rain in our area, otherwise we would have not come here. They told us there is a place where humanitarian agencies are providing assistance. That's why we have come here. If there was rain, we would stay in our village and produce food.
As in Equator County, dozens of residents of Lafon County are fleeing the area each day. Taban Joseph Albino comes from Lafon County. Albino says poor rains this past year lowered crop yields, leaving many villagers with nothing to eat.
The hunger situation in Lafon County actually is terrible and horrible. In fact, the people are suffering because there was poor yield last year, and some years back also there was poor yield because of the absence of the rain. So there was no enough rain until some communities of within some payams did not harvested good yield. The community are just moving from one place to another in search of food.
Albino says even if people had money for food, there is nothing to buy.
The communities are just depending on wild fruits. And you know what is helping the community also, because we have wild halibuts. Many of us are just depending on wild meats. Many people are just pedestrians. They move from here to Torit carrying their belonging like meats or clothes. Some are just taking even their saucepan and exchange it with the grains in this nearby county, which is Lopate West.
Refugee James Omule Utong is from Lafon County. Utong says villagers have had very little food for a long time.
Seriously, the community is suffering from hunger. Since last year, the harvest was not good. Even now, people are still waiting if there will be good rains. As you can see, the movement of women are going to search for their food.
Utong says it is not uncommon to find civil servants who abandon their work to go and look for food since they have not been paid in months. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Gulu, northern Uganda.
Even though South Sudan was officially admitted into the East African Community last year, South Sudanese citizens have yet to reap the benefits of membership. That's because the government has failed to pay more than $8 million in annual contribution fee. As a result, South Sudanese citizens still pay visa fees to enter other East African countries, and the same applies to other East African nationals who visit South Sudan. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan became the 6th member of the East African Community a year ago after President Salva Kiir signed the EAC accession treaty. Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Mawen McCall Arik says even though the heads of the other 5 EAC member states approved South Sudan's admission, the government's financial woes have delayed its membership. To date, Juba has paid only $1 million out of the $8.4 million required in EAC contribution fees, according to Arik.
The obligations on the financial side is what we are still pursuing as a country, given our financial difficulties that we are in.
Being admitted to the regional body allows South Sudan to enjoy all the economic benefits of being an EAC member, such as free movement of labor, capital, and free trade measures aimed at boosting economic integration. South Sudan sent the names of 9 officials nominated to become part of the East African Legislative Assembly. Arik says the lawmakers can join their counterparts when Juba pays its annual contribution.
They are expected to go to Arusha in May. That is going to happen very soon.
South Sudan is also expected to send 2 lawyers and a judge to the East African Court of Justice after its dues are paid. The East African newspaper quotes Daniel Kidega, the outgoing speaker of the EAC Parliament, as saying other partner states are expected to help South Sudan with its financial obligations just as they did for Burundi in 2009. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, traders along the South Sudan-Uganda border say business is not as usual. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what traditional instrument do you like to listen to most?
A drum. Sounds very well for me. Like when they are drumming, sounds very well.
A flute. It sounds great.
A guitar. I like it because, you know what, eh? My brother has it at home. So even its structure, yeah, it's good.
A madinda. I don't know how they call it in English, but it's kind of wooden. They also use wood to play it, yeah. It's laid down, some kind of woods which they keep on banging. It brings out some good sound, like a piano maybe.
Yes, I mostly like to listen to the drum because it sounds so well. In fact, when you listen to those drums, you can get some kind of message.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Traders at Elegu, a small town on the Uganda-South Sudan border, say the conflict in South Sudan has crippled business and life in their once vibrant border town. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Elegu in northern Uganda.
This Ugandan town depended heavily on thriving commercial relations with South Sudan. After South Sudan's independence, hundreds of Ugandans flocked to Elegu and set up businesses that catered to the growing and diverse needs of commuters on the Kampala-Juba Highway. These included lodgings, restaurants, communications and currency exchange services, as well as cash transfers. As more people settled here, shops selling clothes and household items also opened, and a market serving mainly South Sudanese customers was established. Women came from as far away as Juba to buy commodities in Elegu, and South Sudanese officials based in Nimule, just across the border, often spend their weekends here. But South Sudan's 3.5-year-long conflict has disrupted all that. Augustine Mugisha, who owns a shop in Elegu, says conflict in South Sudan is bad news for business in Elegu.
These days, Sudan is not be okay. So if Sudan cannot be okay, here we are not having be well.
Worsening economic and financial conditions and hyperinflation have considerably decreased the purchasing power for most South Sudanese who used to spend a lot of money in Elegu, says Kato Fahad, who has a clothes shop in this border town. Now, Fahad says, that's all changed.
Those people, these days, they don't have money because of that conflict. So if they don't come to buy clothes or anything here in Uganda, for real, they are just little people who buy it.
In the years immediately after South Sudan declared its independence, the country's currency was relatively strong against other currencies in the region. Businesses in much of northern Uganda also accepted the South Sudanese pound from South Sudanese customers, which made it even easier for South Sudanese to buy goods and services in Uganda. Godfrey Musuza Salongo, a money changer, points out this is no longer the case. He says Ugandans, including traders in Elegu, no longer accept the devalued South Sudanese pound as a medium of exchange.
People there, they suffer. Because most of the Sudanese, they come and buy things from here. And here in this side of Uganda, people don't accept pounds. So you have to change the money, then you go and buy what you want.
A weak pound against other currencies means it is increasingly expensive for South Sudanese to purchase commodities across the border. And Fahad says that affects his business.
When the exchange rate is down, then the business is not there. When the exchange rate is up, when it has risen, then the business is somehow good.
Some of Elegu's traders accuse the town's money changers of arbitrarily fixing exchange rates. They claim the fluctuating rates cause confusion in the market. But money changers like Salongo reject that claim, saying it's the financial turmoil in South Sudan that has caused the pound to lose value against other currencies, not money changers' manipulation.
We are not responsible. For us, we are just even getting something very small for surviving. Because we just get one. When we buy pounds, like now we are buying 23 to 24, we are selling 25.
Fahad recalls how business was booming in the years before the December 2013 outbreak of violence in South Sudan, saying he could make up to ₦1 million a day. Today, he says he is lucky to earn 10% of what he used to make in those days.
Those days you could sell like, if the day was good, like 1 AM a day. But now these days, in fact, the best day you can sell like 500, 1,400. Yeah, the bad day you can sell like 100.
Mugisha, Fahad and Salongo all say the vacuum in buying power among most South Sudanese has forced many traders to close shop and get out of Elegu, once a lively and bustling border town, now a town that is being abandoned by traders. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Amoru District, Northern Uganda.
Ahead of the June deadline to review the United Nations peacekeeping mission in Darfur, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations said her administration wants proof from Sudan government that it is making progress towards peace and protecting civilians in the region. Analysts say while the U.N. mission in Darfur merits some streamlining, it still serves a purpose in the region. VOA's Jill Craig has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
The U.S. has told Sudan that it would support cutting back on the joint African Union and United Nations peacekeeping mission in Darfur, known as UNAMID, provided that Khartoum can show tangible progress toward peace and protection in the region. UNAMID costs $1 billion per year. The Trump administration has expressed interest in cutting back on the UN's overall peacekeeping budget. Sudan's foreign minister, Ibrahim Gondour, argues that conditions in Darfur have improved significantly from 2003, when the conflict began.
Now there are no rebel movements in Darfur, no fight in Darfur. IDPs are returning back to their places, and peace is prevailing in Darfur.
Amnesty International's Sudan researcher, Ahmed El Zobir, disagrees.
We receive reports every day there is attacks in IDPs in Darfur. The second benchmark is facilitation of humanitarian access to different parts of Darfur, especially in Jabal Marwa. And this is not taking place at the moment. The third one is progress on the peace talks between the armed groups in Darfur and the Sudan government. This was suspended since August 2016. And since then, there is nothing happening. And the fourth one, which is intercommunal fighting, this is keep happening every now and then.
Peacekeepers deployed to Darfur in 2007, following the 2003 outbreak of violence when Khartoum was accused of unleashing local Arab tribes onto ethnic Africans who rebelled against the government for alleged discrimination. Unrest has continued in the years since. The United States lifted some sanctions against Sudan in January, with then-President Barack Obama citing positive actions by the Sudanese government, including progress in ending military aerial bombardments in Darfur. A State Department official said there could be a permanent revocation of sanctions in 6 months if progress continued, a timeline that coincides with the renewal of the UNAMID mandate. Zach Verton, a fellow at the Washington-based Woodrow Wilson Center, says the UN mission in Darfur could be updated to reflect current realities.
Things have definitely changed, but it remains a complex security environment with lots of overlapping security concerns, criminality, these kind of things. So I think the Trump administration has been pushing for major peacekeeping cuts, and while streamlining the mission is welcome, gutting it, I think, is not.
Analysts worry that a large, abrupt cut to the UNAMID presence could impact humanitarian assistance and civilian protection in Darfur. Eric Reeves is a senior fellow at the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights at Harvard University.
UNAMID has been a failure by any reasonable peacekeeping standards, but failing doesn't mean they haven't provided some protection. That protection would disappear with the kind of cuts that are being mooted within the debates at the Security Council.
The government of Sudan does want UNAMID to leave, but carefully.
But we want a careful exit strategy in accordance with the agreement signed between us and the EU and the UN. And on the basis of that, we are accepting any reasonable evaluation in all places where UNAMID is placed. So we are not talking about an immediate total exit. We are talking about an exit strategy on the basis of conditions on the ground.
In March, the UN ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, accused the UN's peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or MONUSCO, of aiding a government that is inflicting predatory behavior against its own people. She also said the UN should have the decency and common sense to end this. MONUSCO's mandate was renewed at the end of March, but with a reduction of 3,600 in the troop ceiling. The mandates for peacekeeping missions in Mali, southern Lebanon, and the Central African Republic will also come up for renewal before the end of the year. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
That story by Jill Craig from Nairobi brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a song, Stay Safe, by Prince Lupai Moses.
Queen, getting up to Badun, mean I am there.
Selemo Batal.
We have been listening to a test of a new song by Prince Lupai Moses. The song says, "Stay safe." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a joyous weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
One another,